Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome along to Football Digest Extra Time with myself, Ned Keating. No Connor Bromley today, but I am joined by friend of the show, Harry Brent, in his place. And Harry, we're going to talk about the Premier League first up. We'll come on a little bit to, obviously we've just had an international break, an international window, so we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But if anyone else is like myself, we're gagging for the Premier League to return. Can't wait for it to return. And of course, a mouth-watering game to tee us up for the turn of the Premier League. Sunday, 4:30, Manchester City taken on Arsenal, two of the title protagonists this season going toe-to-toe, and it really is a great game for us to return to the Premier League with, and the fact that it's going to kick off what is now this sprint towards it. I say sprint, probably still a bit of a marathon, isn't it? Probably 2 months from now until the end of the campaign. But we know now that there's nothing else, no pauses, no international windows. It is non-stop domestic football between now and the end of the season. And it's a great game for us to return with.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's the perfect game to come back to after such a drab international break for so many reasons. And as you say, the perfect sort of game to kick off the running. We've got a genuine three-horse race for the first time in years. Every single one of them seems capable of winning the title. They've got the sort of the quality within them, and yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. I haven't even got a dog in the fight, but I'm absolutely buzzing for Sunday's game. So yeah, bring it on. It should be an epic one.
The concern is, of course, that we're coming into it. Well, there's two concerns. So the first one's going to be injuries, and we'll talk a little bit more about kind of the fact that it's coming off an international window in a second, but injuries at least anyway, going into it. Stories on our sites on Thursday, you know, Manchester City potentially being without seven players. You know, they had three injuries picked up over the international window that have added to it. You know, Kyle Walker and John Stones with England, Manuel Akanji with Switzerland, Arsenal as well, injury concerns for them. Bukayo Saka having withdrawn from the England squad. He probably will be fit for the game, but again, that's not ideal, withdrawing from international duty a couple of weeks before this big game, and other players as well. Is there a risk that because there are so many injuries, and you would expect this at this stage of the season, international window or not, we're so deep into a campaign, you do start to pick up injuries, but is there a chance that that might detract a little bit from the spectacle, that we are not going to see, you know, rather than Kyle Walker, say, starting at fullback for Man City, we might see Rico Lewis instead, who is, you know, showing signs of being a great fullback, but he's not there at the minute. Is there, you know, those kind of things? Is there a chance that it might detract from a spectacle because we will be missing perhaps some of the key players from this game?
I don't think it'll detract from the spectacle of the game. I mean, obviously, it'll be a big shame if you're missing, as you said, Stones, Walker, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, real special players who can make a difference. But I think, you know, what's on offer, what's at stake will speak for itself. The atmosphere is going to be amazing. There's still plenty of quality in both of their squads. So I think regardless of who plays, it will be a hell of a good game. It'll be a hell of a tense game. And, you know, I assume it'll be entertaining as well. But it's, I mean, it's very interesting with all the injury. Obviously, there's so many injuries for all clubs basically in the last season or so. You do sort of get the impression, you know, and it's sort of given this impression all season that whoever wins the league or whoever sort of comes out on top in a particular battle is going to be the team who avoids injuries the most. So, there is a bit of a sense, as you say, if City turn up and you know, all the seven players that are slightly in doubt for the game, if none of them are playing or few of them are playing, and then they go on to lose, then that just goes to sort of prove it. You know, it just shows how important keeping players fit are. We'll have to see. But as I say, yeah, I don't think it'll take anything away from the spectacle. It's going to be a great game regardless.
Another thing that might, you know, I'm sounding like a bit of a Debbie Downer, I think, here this morning, trying to find ways to talk down this fixture, but something else that might come into play a bit, and it kind of reminds me of after the November, the previous international break, and it's funny how these things kind of, you know, the fixture list throws these things up, but the first game back, and it literally was the first game back at that one, at least, you know, at least this game is only Sunday 4:30, but Saturday 12:30 after the November international break, we had Manchester City at home to Liverpool, and that game felt... It was still an entertaining game and you know, really enjoyable, but it felt maybe it was a little bit disrupted by the fact that both Liverpool and Manchester City would have had such limited time to work with their players. Yes, they get a day more this time around, but it kind of feels like these games, you know, the build up to it, you kind of almost want that 3 week as well, you know, not just as managers, but us in the media as well, just to build to it and build that excitement. And it kind of feels like it's a little bit, whilst we are saying that it's a really tasty game for the Premier League to return to, it kind of almost feels like we're almost robbed a little bit of it and everything that kind of comes around it in the media. And also the managers themselves are robbed of the time to work out exact game plans because it comes so quickly after this international window. We're probably talking about 2 training sessions maximum is what Pep Guardiola and Mikel Arteta are going to get with their players before this game.
I think that's probably fair. But I guess on the other side of it, you sort of have to like to think that Pep Guardiola, Arteta are so kind of meticulously well drilled in how they organise their squads that even if there's been a little bit of a break, the players will know exactly what their jobs are. You'd also imagine that there would have probably been extra prep for this game prior to the international break. They would have been working on it for a while. So, but I do know what you mean. It's sort of it is slightly annoying sort of scheduling. But as I say, that just given everything that's at stake, I still think that, you know, we're going to see two teams, high octane, going at each other, you know, all guns blazing. I don't think there's going to be any sense of a big element missing given the situation.
Given the magnitude of this game and given that it is, you know, as I said before, it's the start of, you know, the final stretch. Again, I feel a little bit going premature saying it's the final stretch, but it feels that way because there is no distractions. There's no breaks between now and the end of the campaign. And given that Arsenal and Manchester City are both also in Europe as well and still pushing strong for the Champions League, how big a game is this in terms of setting the tone for the end of their campaigns? Because, you know, either side gets a win at the weekend, and that is such a huge psychological boost going towards the end of the campaign. And of course, you know, the ground then that it leaves up for the team that loses, if anyone does lose, the ground it leaves for them to make up in terms of the Premier League, and again, setting the tone, the disappointment that they feel, and the fact that it very quickly goes into a midweek game. There is, you know, if you win, it's great. You know, you kind of build that momentum and you can really, really build it. You know, you get 3 wins in the first week back after an international break. You lose and you're kind of like, right, okay, well, the pressure's on that midweek game as well. And then it starts to grow. Psychologically, how big is this game for both of these teams for the chances of being successful between now and the end of the campaign?
I think it's huge. I'm particularly in some ways for Arsenal because I think, you know, when on Sunday, particularly given the games at the Etihad, that could just be the kind of coming of age moment. I mean, they've already got the Man City win monkey off their back earlier in the season, so that was a huge moment. But I think winning on Sunday would put down a real marker, a sort of saying like, right, we are here, we are as good as anyone, we can beat anyone on any day, any stadium, whatever it is. I don't necessarily think Arsenal need to prove that, but I think just, as you say, psychologically, it would be a huge boost for them. And it would be a warning shot to not only Man City, but to Liverpool as well. They think flipping heck, okay, this is, you know, we're going to have a tough time keeping this team at bay. They've got all this momentum. you know, at the same time, I don't think losing there would be a huge sort of, for want of a better word, loss, just given that I do think, as strong as all these three teams going for the title are, they're all going to drop points, I think, over the next 10 games. So I don't think there'll be a sense of, right, whoever loses is out of the title race or anything like that. But you've got to imagine whoever wins is going to be given a heck of a boost. So I think just getting, you know, whoever wins that will be catapulted forward for sure.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Just sticking more on Arsenal, and you touched it there in your answer about kind of, you know, the disappointment that they felt last year, and they were so far clear last year, but that defeat to Manchester City at the Etihad, it kind of, seismic isn't the right word, but it came at that time where it kind of felt that the momentum really had shifted towards Manchester City in that title race. How big a test is it for Arsenal this time around to show how far that they've come, that they're not the team that threw away the lead last year, that they are going to be in it for the long haul, that they are still going to be, you know, if they haven't wrapped it up by the final day of the season, that they are still going to be pushing for it. This is a chance for Arsenal to show how far they've come, isn't it, from last season?
For sure. And I think importantly for them, this is the kind of game where if you're going to be champions, you need to get a result in this game. And again, it's not a necessity. They can lose on Sunday and still win the title. But it is the kind of thing where, you looking back at history, the teams who win the titles get results against their rivals. And, you know, often in the kind of game that you could look at the start of the season, go, that's the most difficult game of the season, which, you know, at the start of the season, they would have said this is. So, yeah, I think it is a huge sort of test for them. As I say, away to City, you shouldn't expect to win. No team should expect to win. But I think, it is a really good opportunity for them to sort of announce themselves and lay down a big marker on the, for their rivals. So, and look, Arsenal have, you know, you touched on it there. Arsenal have come a long way in the last year. It feels like there's been a sort of psychological step up. I feel like they're better at grinding out results. They're better at holding onto leads. Their team just feels more mature, assured, and, you know, quality, you could say, team just feels like the quality is slightly higher. So I think getting a result here would be a big sort of rubber stamp of, yeah, we've arrived, we're better than we were last year, and we're potential title winners.
In terms of danger men and who could be the men to win the game for each team, we'll start off with the host. We'll start off Manchester City first. Who is it you think could be the difference makers for them? For me, I'm thinking we're probably looking at Phil Foden and Erling Haaland, and I would assume that that might be an opinion that you probably share as well, that we're looking at those two players, and especially Phil Foden this year seems to be stepping up in the big games for Manchester City too.
For sure, yeah. Foden will be huge, and you know, I mean, he's played so much for City, been so important to them. It feels a bit obvious to say Haaland, but to be fair, I think Haaland's record of... I wouldn't say his record in big games is suspect, but his record of kind of scoring the first goal in big games is not great. So I would almost be surprised if he's the man to sort of break the deadlock on Sunday. For City, I think a lot will depend on whether they get Kevin De Bruyne fit, just because I think he's got a very good habit of turning up in big games and in lots of cases scoring goals in big games. So, you know, I think in some ways he's their most important kind of task, really. Get him fit, and I think they'll be in good stead.
And for Arsenal, are we looking at a captain's performance needed from Martin Odegaard? Are we hoping that Bukayo Saka is fit after withdrawing from the England squad? Could it be Declan Rice as well? You know, the attacking you know, depth that Manchester City have, even if Kevin De Bruyne isn't fit, and the players that they've still got in that midfield. You know, it could be a busy day for whoever it is that's tasked with defending that back four for Arsenal as well. Where do you see the difference maker being for Arsenal?
I mean, same sort of thing. They've got to hope for Saka being fit. I think, as you said, Odegaard has got to have a big game. And again, this is a sort of situation where he's got to prove, right, I can be the, for want of a better thing, Kevin De Bruyne figure for Arsenal. He's obviously proven that over the course of this season, been magnificent. I'm not saying he's not at that sort of talismanic level, but you know, doing it in a game like this would be a real real statement. I'm really interested in the Declan Rice Rodri battle. I know they're not always sort of directly competing, but both of them, particularly you know this season and recently, have sort of shown not only a sort of ability to turn up in big games, but also to pitch in with goals. So I'd be very interested to see how those two get on. I almost think that, you know, maybe whoever wins that battle, that could be the real sort of key difference maker. Even though they're not sort of traditionally attacking players, I think that could be a really good battleground. So I'm interested to see how that one goes.
Just before we get your predictions on the game, just wanted to, you know, something that kind of ties into it. Yes, it's away from the Etihad, but a couple of hours earlier at Anfield, Liverpool will be taking on Brighton. Two of Liverpool's title rivals are going to go toe-to-toe. At least one of them is going to be dropping points. Does the fact that they are playing each other, that City and Arsenal are playing each other, put a little bit more pressure on Liverpool to have to go and beat Brighton? They're under pressure anyway. As you say, you know, there will be times in the title race when they drop points, but they'd like to avoid them as much as they can. And the same goes for Arsenal and Manchester City. But it's on these weekends. It felt similar earlier this month as well, when Arsenal were hosting Brentford. And that was the day before Liverpool faced Manchester City at Anfield. And that kind of felt like Arsenal needed a win, and they got it late on, you know, through Kai Havertz, but they needed the win because they knew at least one of those two teams would be dropping points. And in the end, both of them did drop points. They both dropped two, Liverpool and Manchester City by drawing. So does that, knowing that, you know, there'll be an opportunity to punish someone's slip up, at least one team's slip up by dropping points, that they need to go out there and get the victory against Brighton the 2 hours beforehand?
There'll definitely be a pressure for the reasons you say. Yeah, I feel like it'll be a kind of double-edged sword thing. For the sort of pressure side of things, and the fact that they'll feel like, right, this is an opportunity we can't miss. I think they'll also probably be kind of motivated by the idea of going clear at the top, you know, particularly if it's like a draw or something. So, I think Liverpool have shown this season that almost above everything, that their mentality is their strongest weapon. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're not too fazed by the idea of, we can't miss this opportunity to kind of get clear. That said, you know, Brighton are a good side on their day. So, you know, they could have a little wobble. But yeah, I get the impression Liverpool are not going to be super fazed by it, but it could be a potential, you know, reason to slip up for sure.
That all-important training time has come now for predictions, which will likely come back to haunt us. Don't worry, Harry, I won't be harsh and I won't put you first. I will put my head on the chopping block before you. I think I'm going to be that horrible person that says that it's going to be a 0-0 and that we're all expecting it to be a great game and it will turn out to be a damp squib instead. And I think, for the reasons that I stated earlier, the fact that, you know, yes, the players are quality, and yes, Pep Guardiola and Mikel Arteta are fantastic managers. Mikel Arteta probably did drill it into Arsenal before they went away in the international break. You know, they had that spare weekend when they weren't in league or cup action, so that might have benefited them in drilling in the game plan then. But it's the rhythm, and I think players might take a bit of time to get used to each other after being on international duty. And I think we saw that in that previous Man City-Liverpool game that I spoke about in November, which was the first game back after that international break. However, whilst I am predicting a 0-0, what does excite me is the fact that any time Manchester City have been televised on Sky this season, I don't think it's been a boring game. You know, we had those back-to-back 4-4s, you know, Chelsea and Tottenham, when they took on them, even the Chelsea game in February as well, whilst it was 1-1, it was still an exciting game. I don't think Man City have been involved in too many boring games on TV, so fingers crossed that still rings true. But I'm going to be the pessimist and I'm going to predict a 0-0 here. Harry, for you, hopefully you see a few more goals in this game than I do.
Well, only just. I see it being 1-1. I'm going with you. I think a draw is most likely. Two things, really. The first is, I've got, call it nothing more than a hunch, but I really have a good feeling about Arsenal's chances this season, not least because I think there are still kind of, I don't know, question marks hanging over a few of City's performances over the season, you could say. Liverpool, I still think, haven't quite been putting in those absolutely tip-top performances, whereas I think you can say this about Arsenal. Arsenal have also, they've got a good record against their rivals, which is something you can't say about City, which is quite curious. You know, City usually have a, you know, fantastic record of blowing away the sort of big teams in the league. They haven't done it this year. So I it's too much to say I'd be surprised to see City win, because do you know what? They could win 4-0. They've always got the potential to do that to anyone, really. But I just think there's a little bit of, I don't know what they call it, momentum, call it sort of something, energy about Arsenal this season. They've got the monkey off their back about beating City. I think they're going to go in with confidence. I don't think they're going to win. And I think there will be an element of sort of caginess, as you say, as we sort of talked about. Nobody wants to lose this game. Losing the game will feel a little bit like you're out of the title race. So I think there will be an element of caginess, but I do think there'll be a couple of goals. I think it's going to be a draw, but I think that's going to set up Arsenal for a really good running, because I'll think, right, we've beaten City at home. We've drawn with them away. I think did the same to Liverpool. So, you know, that'll put them in good stead. But as I say, I just have a sneaky suspicion Arsenal have got the momentum. I know it's not what you want to hear as a Tottenham fan, but it's just the impression I'm getting.
Any more talk like that and you won't be invited back on when we need you next time. But just moving on away from the Premier League now, and as I teased at the start of the show, we are going to talk a little bit about England, because of course it has been an international break, an international window. For England, Gareth Southgate wanted them to be tested against, you know, some of the best teams in the world. They took on Brazil, they took on Belgium, but they were unable to beat either of them. A defeat to Brazil obviously last weekend, you know, the last gasp, Jude Bellingham equaliser against Belgium on Tuesday night, is not exactly, you know, there isn't points, very little to play for in international friendlies other than pride, isn't there? But all the same, it's still not ideal preparation for a major tournament when you know you're going to come up against one of the best sides. That still there seems to be this, not so much difficulty, but there's still questions asked about Southgate's England when they do come up against, you know, a France or you know, these expected bigger nations, that they do seem to come up short quite often.
Yeah, it's a bit of a major red flag, but particularly given how, you know, under strength both Brazil and Belgium were. I think Jude Bellingham spoke after the game, and he made a good point, which was that, you know, lots of these players England players have never played with each other before, and, you know, they're sort of still finding their feet. But at the same time, you've got a £105 million centre midfielder. He himself is a £100 million midfielder, considered, you know, one of the best players in the world. You know, you've got Phil Foden, you've got John Stones, you've got Carl Walker played 20 minutes of the first game. So there was plenty of quality out there, and it was worrying. It was a very worrying sign that not only did, you know, the results not go the way, but the performances were just drab, and there didn't seem to be an awful lot of cohesion, you know, and... I think it is a worrying sign. You make a good point. You can't take the sort of warm up games too seriously. They are a bit like pre-season games. That, you know, obviously you expect the players to sort of turn it on a bit more when the tournament comes along. But as you've pointed out, given England's record of not only not beating but not performing against the better sides of the world or of Europe, you just sort of get the impression that, right, this is going to happen again. We'll do fine in the groups. We'll get out of the groups with fairly, you know, limited trouble. And then, you know, first sign of trouble, we face a team with a couple of good players and a decent manager, and we're out. So this is the worry. And I think they'll, you know, you can sense it with England fans. There's been a big sort of dip in confidence of how we're going into the tournament. So yeah, there's a lot of questions to ask over the next, or questions to answer rather, over the next few months.
We're recording this Thursday morning. I'll be honest, when I checked the bookmakers' odds this morning, I thought England might have drifted a little bit in the market after the last week. I expected England to have drifted in the market instead. And yes, I understand it's a bit of a biased market you know, English bookmakers sort of shock having them as favourites to try and tempt people in and get it. But that's the remarkable thing here, that the bookmakers still have England listed as favourites for the Euros. And like I said, you know, I know it's a bit twisted because all the shock English bookmakers have England top. You know, I think Andy Dunn put it right earlier in the week when he referred to it as bookmakers wheeze, is what he referred to. And I completely understand what he's coming from. But just as a general point, as guys involved in the media, you know, is it, and even for fans as well, is it time to kind of, you know, sit back and reassess the idea that England are among the favourites? For me, if you want to win the Euros, and I probably said this last time and it went completely wrong, but if you want to win the Euros, you're going to have to beat France. And admittedly, obviously, last time Switzerland sorted them, and Switzerland naturally didn't go on. They went out in the next round against Spain, I think it was. But I still think that France are a team to beat. Germany have shown the results this week that they are getting back to this, you know, the Germany of old, that, you know, the since the 2018 World Cup, the performances that they've had then are, you know, brushed one side, they're getting back to that German side of old. Spain have a very, very good young side, I think, coming through. Whether or not this tournament comes too early for them, I don't know, but that confidence of youth might help them through the tournament. For me, I just can't, you know, I don't know, maybe the pessimism from my predictions for Arsenal and the Manchester City game are coming through in this now, but I just can't see where England are considered among maybe the top three favourites, whereas the bookmakers currently have them as number one.
Yeah, you always expect a little bit of sort of domestic bias with those sorts of things. I'm caught in two minds with this because I think it's probably a bit much, and it's very typically English of us to sort of go, right, we're the favourites, we're the best, we should win it. We certainly have, I think, a squad in, you know, in terms of quality and in terms of depth that only two or three nations can rival. I'm not saying that we're better than those nations, but I think there are a few nations that can sort of rival the depth that we have, which is something you couldn't say in the, you know, when you think of the golden generation of the sort of mid 2000s, the sort of thing that people often overlooked is the fact that there were so many nations who had incredible squads as well. Italy, France, obviously a little bit later on, Spain had a fantastic squad, you know, Brazil early on in the decade, whoever it was, Portugal, Holland, they all had amazing, you know, players. Whereas I think that you've touched on it there, Germany seems to be finding their feet. Spain have a young squad, and you know, France obviously have potential. I think Portugal have got great players, but very few squads I think have the depth that we have. So we definitely need to reassess this idea that we should walk it, which is, I think, a lot of people sort of had that opinion a couple of weeks ago or last week before these games. But at the same time, I don't think we should make excuses for the fact that we have this. You know, I think we should sort of be honest about the quality of the squad that we have and where our expectations should be. We may not be the favourites anymore, or we may not sort of see ourselves as the one who, you know, should absolutely go all the way. But at the same time, I think anything less than the final should be, I don't like to use the word unacceptable because it's knockout football. You never know what's going to happen. But I think anything less than a final should be a disappointment, because just given the sheer quality that we have. So, I think a little bit of reassessment, but not an awful lot.
I think if it goes according to seedings, then if England were to make the final, it would involve beating France. So there we go. Maybe I will be proved right. Maybe England beat France and then win the final against, yeah, I think it would be Germany at that point, wouldn't it? Or I can't be. The confusing thing about the Euros is where you've got the third place teams and you're trying to work out who might go where if they finish third and trying to match that all up. But yeah, semi-finals against France, I think potentially maybe a final against Germany then if it all goes to plan. But anyway, that might be getting ahead of ourselves. From the international break, a lot of injuries in this England squad as well. We will have to add that caveat in. Did give opportunities to other players. You know, up front, it was probably a shootout between Ollie Watkins and Ivan Toney for that second striker spot. But as well in midfield, we saw Kobbie Mainoo come through and make his debut and his first full England start. In defence as well, Ezri Konsa was given a chance at right back, a little bit out of position. He has played there at times for Aston Villa. But again, you know, throughout the squad, there were opportunities. Anthony Gordon as well, another one that was given a minutes as well to kind of see if he's got what it takes to make that squad. Was there anyone in particular that put their hand up this week, you know, even if the results weren't great, that they provided a performance that would kind of force their way onto a plane to Germany this summer?
Yeah, I think, I mean, everyone's talking about Kobbie Mainoo, and I think they're absolutely right to, you know, I would say that if it wasn't, stating the bleeding obvious. I think Jared Bowen's made a really good case this week. not least because I think he's obviously seen fantastic form, and he has been for the last couple of years, but particularly this season. I think he played really well in both games, or, you know, made a good sort of showing. But I think that the main thing for me is that I think his profile offers a kind of dynamic that England is lacking, is maybe a bit strong, but slightly lacking, a sort of more of a direct running wide forward. You know, we've got the likes of kind of Grealish, Foden, a bit more sort of creative, a bit more sort of technical, whereas I think he offers a real sort of, as I say, more direct, more sort of, I don't know, words are escaping me for the right way to describe it. But I think there's just a sort of dynamic that he can offer the squad that I think would be very useful to Southgate in the summer, just as a kind of bit of variety, chuck him on if something's going on. And, you know, he's playing really well. So I think he's given himself a great shout. Colby Mainoo, I think, is, you know, everyone's talking about it, but I think he's put himself right into the conversation. I think he has to go for sure. I'd be, you know, depending on what happens as we go towards the end of the season, and obviously there's a couple of games, international games before the tournament starts, but wouldn't be too surprised if he starts alongside Rice in that midfield, particularly if he keeps this formation. I don't think Conor Gallagher's gonna challenge him at this point, unless his form, you know, really picks up. But he didn't play well against Brazil, so I think on the basis of those of those two games, I think those are the two that stood out for me. Obviously, from a club perspective, I think you've got, and you know, as it picked up a knock this week, I think Cole Palmer is also somebody that can definitely sort of put himself into contention. But as I say, didn't see anything of him this week, so hard to sort of know exactly where Southgate sees him.
We are going to finish the show with if we were picking our 23s for Germany. Again, of course, this is, you know, a big conundrum for Gareth Southgate now, is that the past two major tournaments are both in 26-man squads, and we're back down to 23, a tight 23 now this time. So maybe there was one or two players previously that you could kind of, you know, not so much carry, but you don't have to worry too much a bit about, you know, kind of if you pick up injuries, we've got enough players in the squad to cover it. You know, a 23-man squad it's not much to kind of sustain for a 4-week tournament. Again, Harry, I'm not going to, you know, put you at danger first. I'll put myself forward first. Don't worry here. If I'm asking you, I might as well, you know, put mine out first. So for the England squad that I've gone for, it would be goalkeepers would be Jordan Pickford, Aaron Ramsdale, even if he is picking up splinters on the Arsenal bench. I mean, I still think he's England's second best goalkeeper. And I'll go for Jack Butland. I think Nick Pope's missed too much of the season through injury. He might, you know, come back and play brilliantly between them, but I think Jack Butland's been doing really well up in Scotland for Rangers. And I think especially if you've got Aaron Ramsdale, who hasn't played much this season for Arsenal, in that squad, yes, I still think he's England's second best goalkeeper. But then again, you probably also could do with someone who's been playing regularly, like Jack Butland has in Scotland for Rangers, and he's done great. And he's obviously, you know, been in the England squad before, and I think he could you know, be a real benefit for the squad. Defenders, I've gone for 8 of them. The standard, you know, you will probably, from looking at my squad list of 23, you will work out the formation that I'm probably picking for a start 11 as well. But 8 defenders, 4 fullbacks, 4 centre-halves. So Kyle Walker, Kieran Trippier, Luke Shaw, Ben Chilwell in the fullback positions. And then in the centre of defence, Harry Maguire, John Stones, Joe Gomez, I think for his versatility as well. If you do pick up injuries, he can filter around into the other positions in the fullback areas. For Kaya Tomori, I think he's done, you know, again, a player that has had a few injuries this season, but I think, you know, the fact that he keeps getting overlooked by Gareth Southgate is a complete travesty. You'll notice that Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't listed among my defenders. That's because we know that Gareth Southgate now sees him as a midfielder, so he's in there with Declan Rice, Jude Bellingham. Cobby Minor, for me, is, I'm guessing he's probably in your squad as well, Harry, but Cobby Minor has definitely put his hand up, said that he should be on that plane for Germany. I think he can even start games for England at the Euros, but of course, the, you know, kind of similar to Bellingham in 2021 when he went along to the squad and had a great experience, I think Cobby Minor will benefit hugely from being in that England squad, and I don't think he's just there to make up numbers. He can start games for England. James Maddison and Jordan Henderson, yes, he's had a bit of a mixed season in Saudi Arabia and the Netherlands, but I still think his experience could be quite crucial in this squad. Up front in the attack on the flanks, we've got Bukayo Saka, Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford has had a difficult season at Man United, but again, thinking about this idea of a 23-man squad and how many players might need to fill in other positions, Marcus Rashford, if it gets to it, can perform the role as a central striker for England as well. Likewise, so could Jarrod Bowen. Again, like yourself, been in great form this season, and he's played down the middle for West Ham as well at times, if it comes to it. And the two strikers, of course, Harry Kane, and I think Ivan Toney's done far better than Ollie Watkins the last week. And for that matter, I think he's put himself forward, but I do still feel sorry for Dominic Solanke not even getting a chance. Great season that he's having for Bournemouth, but he probably looks like he's going to be watching it from home, judging by the squad for the last international window. So that's my 23. Over to you, Harry.
Yeah, as you said, the 23 number is just so punishing, isn't it? I mean, I didn't even consider Dominic Solanke, and how criminal is that given his form? So in goal, I've got two of the same ones as you. I've got Pickford and Ramsdale. My third one, I've gone for James Trafford, not simply because I think that third slot is just a grave slot. No one, you know, you're not going to get any football. So I think why waste it on, and I agree with you about Pope, why waste it on somebody like Butland or Johnston? Give it to somebody who could probably benefit from just the experience of being in a tournament. He might be England's number one. He might not be, but I think I would give it to a youngster. That's my sort of view on that. In defence, I've gone a little bit risky. I know that sort of tendency is to go for a lot of depth and just to make sure, look, we're going to be covered for injuries. But generally speaking, I think in teams, defences are the things that never change. Apart from goalkeepers, defences are the things that very rarely change. And the sort of requirements I was given before coming on is if everyone's fit. So this is going to take this into account. So Stones, Walker, Maguire are getting in. I think Levi Colwill is guy for me. It gives you that option of both the cover at centre back and at left back. Not been amazing at left back, but he's played there. Mark Gahey I like as well, so he's getting in. Reece James, I think, you know, if he's fit, has to go. You may prefer Kyle Walker at right back, but I think Reece James, if he's fit, is an incredible player. And then I was torn. I think I could take either Chilwell or Shaw in that last slot. That leaves me only with one left back. But as I say, Levi Colwill can fill in. And I think, again, barring any injuries, you can always shove Kyle Walker there or something. You know, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, look, we've gone to my head. I'm a Chelsea fan. I'm taking Chilwell, but I could easily take Shaw. That's not a problem. Midfield. Rice and Bellingham, Maynou, you've already mentioned it. I won't go into too much detail. Madison goes as well. I think, again, it's sort of criminal how little he's been. You know, he got sort of minutes over the weekend, the last couple of games. You know, a brilliant player to have in the squad, come off the bench. Even starting, he could do some serious damage. I agree with you about Henderson, slightly on the outs, but a good experience head, good player to bring on if, you know, you just need to sort of, you know, you're defending a lead or something, need a little bit of sort of assuredness in midfield or whatever. And again, perhaps Chelsea bias coming in, but I've gone for Conor Gallagher just because he's a guy who can sort of do a lot of roles. If, you know, if something happens to Rice, he could probably do a bit of that. If something happens to Maynard, he can come in and do that. Hell, if we get seven injuries at number 10, he can come in and do the number 10 role. Not likely, but he can do it. And then up front, Harry Kane's obviously going. I've gone for Ollie Watkins over Ivan Toney, just on the basis of club form. And obviously that the whole idea of, you know, I know he's been back for a couple of months now, Ivan Toney, but just missing so much football. I think I like what I've seen from Ollie Watkins a bit more than what I've seen from Toney over the course of the season. Saka and Foden are obviously going. I think Jack Grealish, despite his troubling form, not troubling, but slightly underwhelming form, I think he goes. He's got the potential to do some stuff. Leaving Rashford and Sterling out, I think their just form over this season has not been good enough. I think I agree with you about the idea of having players that can sort of do multiple positions and multiple roles. And I was very tempted to put Rashford in for that reason, but I just think he's not been at it this season to go somewhere. Last two slots go to Cole Palmer. I think he's a moments player. I think he's a great person to. I don't think he should start, but he can come off and nab a goal. And Jarrod Bowen.
Brilliant. I think we've nailed it there between us. We've got two very good 23-man squads that should get England to a final. And of course, if anyone's listening or watching back, of course, get involved across our social media platforms and let us know your 23-man squads as well. We'll be really interested to see what you come up with. Harry, really appreciate your time today. As always, of course, you can keep up to date with all the latest from the Premier League and especially around that big game, Manchester City against Arsenal on Sunday, across the Daily Mirror, Daily Star and Daily Express websites. Quick note for next week, we're not back on Monday, but John Cross and Andy Dunn will be back Tuesday morning instead, owing to the Easter weekend. I'm sure you can appreciate bank holiday Mondays probably aren't the best to record, so yes, we'll be back Tuesday with John Cross and Andy Dunn to reflect on the Premier League action and of course that big game between Manchester City and Arsenal, but for now it's goodbye.